Maybe my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel at home. I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel at home.
Hello and welcome to the My Home is on the Road show. My name is Dave Manning, and this week we're going to go back to one of the very first My Home is on the Road shows that I did. It's a show with a good friend of mine, Rolf Buzzell, who is a historian for the state of Alaska, and it's an interview with him and listening to a song that he wrote, kind of telling the story of how the first song that he ever wrote in his life helped him get into the finals for the Alaska Song of the Year contest. So we're going to go down to Side Street Espresso here after a little intro to the show and join Rolf Buzzell on the My Home is on the Road show, one of the very early shows, definitely worth hearing again. Hello and welcome to the My Home is on the Road show. This is the half-hour weekly show for people that believe that home is where you park it. And there's more of us out there than you might think, traveling in RVs and little Volkswagen buses and all kinds of jalopies around the country. You might call us homeless, you might call us vagabonds, you might call us gypsies, and we might be all of those things, or none of those things. The skinny on me, I make my living playing the blues. I play the piano in bars and coffee shops and casinos and anywhere that'll pay the bills. And I live in Vincent. Vincent is a 1965 Volkswagen microbus. It's a sundial camper for those of you that are into that sort of thing. But it's a classic hippie bus. Goes anywhere. It's good on gas. Easy to fix. Needs to be fixed often. Did I mention it was good on gas? So that's me. This is my show. I tell stories from the road. I play music from other artists that I meet in my travels. And when you travel in an old Volkswagen bus, there's something magical. If you ever get the chance, just ride around the block in one, because just seeing this thing coming down the road just makes so many people happy. One of the great joys is just having people wave at you. And I love when you get an old hippie or something that sees it, and you can tell like 20, 30 years just evaporated. He was right back to where he was doing some crazy thing back in 68 or something. And maybe one of the greatest things about owning an old Volkswagen bus is the stories. Because people know as soon as you show up that you're going to be friendly. And there's all kinds of people that have had, you know, some kind of story. Something happened to them, either in a Volkswagen bug or in a Volkswagen bus. And then you wind up just hearing all kinds of crazy things. And pretty soon you've got friends all over the place. And that's kind of one of the reasons I started the radio show. Between playing music and bar rooms and casinos and coffee shops and traveling around the old Volkswagen bus, I wound up hearing a lot of stories, and I felt like some of these stories should be getting out there. And that's kind of the idea behind My Home is on the Road show. Telling the stories from the road and playing the music from the road. And speaking of music, the song you hear in the background, the theme song, is off of my second CD, a CD called Vincent Rolls. And if you ever want to check out me, my music, or anything about the radio show, go to davemanning.net.
Where my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel home. And I don't know if I'm ever gonna back again this way. The road's the only place I feel at home. Feel at home.
All right, so this week we've got a bit of a unique show. We're going to focus just on one song the show, and the song is called The Ghost of Point Comfort.
And here at Point Comfort, patiently I wait in this beautiful.
It's a song recorded by Robin Green, who is a singer-songwriter that I used to play in a group with called Resolution Road. And the other main member of that group was Rolf Buzzell, who played the harmonica and was also the person that wrote the song Point Comfort, or at least he wrote the lyrics. I met Rolf down at Side Street Espresso when I was up in Anchorage, and we sat down and talked about the song because it has a very unique story for a number of reasons. And Rolf is a guy that's in his mid-50s. He's got a bushy gray beard and an optimistic smile. He's a historian for the state of Alaska, and every summer he still goes out in the field with his trusty .44 revolver for bear protection. He's out there mapping historic sites. He's the kind of guy that can see the outline of a cabin or a house, where most of us would just see a bit of uneven ground overgrown with weeds and a mosquito-infested Alaskan forest. In the case of Sunrise, it kind of became a personal quest. Sunrise is a ghost town, a gold rush town that was abandoned many, many, many years ago. He's even put wooden street signs out in the woods in seemingly random spots, but this is where the streets were, where the general store was, where there was boats unloading supplies, and the dreamers who came north because they had everything to gain and nothing to lose. Rolf's reports to the state, by their nature, are dry and factual, and he joined Robin Green and myself in a group called Resolution Road, as I mentioned, and when he did, he didn't realize that he'd have to become a songwriter, too.
You were submitting an application for the Anchorage Folk Festival, and you needed a name for the group, and you needed a little blurb about it, and so you wrote up a little blurb, and I remember you reading it to us, and it said something like, we're a bunch of songwriters, we've been meeting in Robin's living room for a year, and something like that. And I remember saying to you and Robin, I said, well, there's two things wrong with that. One, I'm not a songwriter, and two, I've only been with you a month. one of you, I don't know if it was you or Robin, said, well, it doesn't matter how long you've been with us, but as far as being a songwriter, you better get started. probably about a week or two later, I was having a dream one night, and woke up in the middle of the night, and the dream essentially was of a woman, and she was a ghost, and she was in a long white gown, and she was haunting the cemetery that I had restored down in Sunrise, the Point Comfort Cemetery. And she was haunting this cemetery, and then she would go down from the cemetery down the hill, and she would float across the 6 Mile Creek and up the creek past the old gold rush town of Sunrise. And I woke up, it was so vivid, I woke up and I could feel words to what I was seeing, and I'd never had that experience before. And so I got up, found a piece of paper, and wrote down the words that I was thinking about, and those words essentially constituted the chorus. I mean, it just came to me, and I'm not a person who was thinking about writing a song. I don't even write poetry. I can't remember ever getting up and writing anything in the middle of the night. And the next day, I sat down and thought about it, and thought, I've written the chorus to a song, and so I crafted an outline for a storyline. And the outline of the story is a woman and her husband go to Sunrise during the gold rush in 1897 or 98. And he dies in a bore tide. He's crossing, turning an arm in a small boat, and a bore tide about 3-4 feet high comes through and takes him and two of his partners with him. And meanwhile, she's pregnant. She's stuck in Sunrise. And she dies in childbirth. And so she is waiting for her husband to come back, because he's left, they never recovered the body, and she's waiting for him to come back, and she's haunting the place until he returns, her true love returns. And that essentially, became the storyline, and also the chorus, and how it kind of fell together for me. The other thread of this whole story is that I'm a historian by training and by profession. That I'm most interested in Alaska history is the gold rush mining and settlement. And there was a gold rush in Alaska, a series of them, starting in southeast and spreading to the interior and then to south central in 1895 and 96. There was a gold discovery on Turnigan Arm.
Talk about that. The conditions that made that happen, because there wouldn't be a gold rush now, even if there was.
Right, one. Right. And so I got involved with Sunrise at one point. I learned about it. Someone took me down there and found a whole ghost town that had been relatively undisturbed, an archaeological site that had been undisturbed for almost 100 years, and I've spent a lot of my time working at Sunrise, mapping the features and documenting the features and restoring the cemetery and kind of getting into the history and learning about the characters, the people who lived there, and trying to pull together, make some sense out of this site that for a few brief weeks in the summer of 1896 was the largest town in Alaska. The reason why there was a gold rush to Alaska is interesting in the first place. In the 1890s, about 1892-93, the United States underwent a huge recession, and very similar to the recession that we're going through right now. And in 1894, Grover Cleveland was elected president, and he didn't do much in terms of a stimulus program or anything. He was basically a laissez-faire president. And he didn't do much to try to get the economy going. So it became, the recession became known as Cleveland Hard Times. And the recession was hard and deep and affected people all over the United States and spread all over the world. And it was really desperate times for lots of people. They lost everything that they had. The one thing that really emerged out of the late 1890s was the discovery of gold in Alaska and in the Klondike. And even though the gold discoveries were rich, the fact that the country was in a major, serious recession made the gold rush seem, you know, much more attractive to people. And so thousands, hundreds of thousands of people came to Alaska and Yukon in search of gold, in search of a new life and a new opportunity. And that was the situation here in Turnagain Arm, when people came to Hope and Sunrise and settled those two towns, which were the first non-native communities in South Central Alaska. It also was the motivator for most people to come to the north to make a new start, to make their fortune in gold. And most of them didn't. Most of them came up here, probably didn't even make equivalent of wages. Many of them left after 3-4 years, sometimes only a season. Very few of them stayed, and very few of them struck it rich and made any kind of a fortune.
So the song is very, in a lot of ways, very typical. Like, yeah, you looking, and one of the things you mentioned is looking for color in all the creeks and streams.
Right, right. And so these prospectors would come to Alaska, and they would come to the various areas such as Turnagain Arm, and they would check out all the creeks, and looking for color, which is gold flakes in the creek, and then they would follow the color that they would find further up the creek to where there would be more gold and there would be commercial quantities to make it worthwhile. The first creek where gold was discovered was Resurrection Creek, where Hope is now. And then a year or two later, when there were too many miners on Resurrection Creek, some of them left and they spread out around Turnagain Arm, and they checked out every stream and every creek, and they found gold on Canyon Creek, which is a tributary of Six Mile Creek.
Okay.
And it turned out that Six Mile Creek drainage was much more lucrative, and there was more gold in the early years than there was Resurrection Creek. And the towns of Sunrise and Hope evolved as the supply centers for each of those two creeks. So very rapidly, within a year, these communities went from just being several tents to being towns of 400 or 500 people. In some cases, in the summer, there might be several thousand people camped out. And they would come into Sunrise by boat, and then they would set up a camp, and then they would travel up the creeks and look for places to do their prospecting. In most cases, the good ground was already staked, and many of these people left after a very short period of time. In some cases, people lost their lives in the gold rush, and as well as their dreams. But for the vast majority of people who came here and left, the experience they had in Alaska was probably the peak experience of their years. I mean, it was full of adventure. They came to a land where there were no services, no communities, no towns, there was no justice system, there was no stores, there was no, you know, they had to bring everything on their backs. to do the prospecting. And then eventually, as gold was found in the creeks, these small communities, camps, would evolve. Some of them would last only a season, and they would be gone. In the case of Sunrise, it lasted about 20 years, and then it disappeared. The last person in Sunrise died in 1939, and the town was abandoned. Hope has survived as a community all these years, for over 100 years, but just in some years, there were only 10 or 20 people there. The creeks and rivers in the Turnagain Arm area were what we call a poor man's gold rush. Sometimes you could make expenses or make wages, but very few people made a living at it. And most of them had to leave, were forced to leave because they couldn't support themselves.
Yeah, I remember, you know, this past weekend when I was out at Hope, and you could look across, Turnagain Arm, and especially when the tide's in, you're like, oh, yeah, you could paddle a boat across that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't really paddle a boat across that.
Well, you can, but it's dangerous, because I think once a day or once every other day, or there's this, when the tides change, under certain circumstances, this wave, they call it a bore tide, comes in, and it can be anywhere from 3 to 6 feet tall. And it comes in very fast, and it'll swamp a boat. Yeah. The Turnagain Arm is very shallow, and when the tide changes, the shallowness of it makes it so that the bore tide wave could be very high,
yeah,
and moves very fast. So it can be very dangerous. It can also, you can get stuck out there as the tide's going out, or before it comes in, you can get stuck in mud out there, and then when that war tide comes in, you have no defense against it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was imagining, was, you know, they're out there, and either they're in low water, because the tide's out all the way, they're sitting on the mud waiting for water, but then too much water comes in, and especially there, it's hard to understand until you look at it, but that, it's not water like you'd see where you'd jump in the ocean. It's water that's full of silt, number one, and two, you know, probably just a few degrees above freezing most of the time. So you really, if that hits you and that swamps your boat, you've got minutes before your body's just going to shut down.
Right. Yeah.
So you set off across Turnagain Arm with two prospectors in a leaky borrow boat. Violent storm from gusting winds arose, and the bore tide took the three of you to the deep.
And I called her up and said, I've written a song. And she said, well, why don't you come over tomorrow night for dinner, and we'll see what you came up with. And then I began to panic because, she's such a good songwriter and a lyricist, that I began to think, oh, my God, she's going to laugh at what I've done. And I felt embarrassed. But I did take it over and had dinner with her and her two daughters. And then her daughter picked up the paper that the lyrics were on, and she read it, and she started crying. And her mother, Robin, said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "You should see this." And so Robin looked at it and just immediately turned around, walked away, picked up her guitar, and went off into the corner and started playing with it musically. And Robin, I know this from being around Robin and some other songwriters, that when they're in the mood, you just let them do their thing. You just say, let them be and let them do their creative thing. And so I spent some time with her two daughters, and then I left. And the next day, Robin called me back and said, "It's all done." And I said, "What?" And she said, "The song." And so I went over, and she played it for me, and I was just blown away. She said she changed two or three words to make them fit with what she'd come up with. And she had some kind of a tune from years back, or a riff, that she had always wanted to use, and it somehow just fit. But she said that when she read the lyrics for the first time, she heard music when she read it. It triggered something.
Okay, here's a question that I'm hoping to ask every songwriter that I talk to, and you qualify. But and the question is, why bother writing songs, given that, you know, we create these things? It's something I wonder about, too. We write songs, and we put all this passion, all this energy to writing songs and playing music and making CDs. And when, you know, 100 years from now, like, or, you know, we're going to die at some point, and maybe our recordings or our scribbles will be in a shoebox, and then maybe they'll be in a landfill. And, you know, why do it in the first place?
I think most songwriters write because it's something that comes out of them as an artist. You could ask the same question, why do you paint this picture when 100 years from now it's not going to be here? And we paint the picture, we write the song because it's part of us, it moves, it comes out of us. It's part of the creative juices that we have. And then we share it with other people. And there are hundreds and thousands of songwriters, very few of them ever get recorded, very few of them are ever heard on the radio, but I think the music that they share with themselves and they share with a few other people is the reason for doing it, and it's the best reason for doing it. Music is a universal language that people share all over the world, and you don't have to understand the words to get the feel for the music.
That is true. That's a very good answer to that question. Fantastic. Then, to kind of follow the whole thing through, then you guys were kind of hand-picked to play it at the, what was it, Alaska Song of the Year concert. And cause if I recall from what Robin told me, you submitted the song to the Alaska Song of the Year contest, which happens every fall. And, you know, and it's judged by a group of people, and there's different, you know, genres and categories and stuff. And from what Robin told me, if I'm remembering this correctly, was that when it went through the judging process, it kind of didn't quite make it to the point where you guys were going to be, like, in the finals and playing in the concert. But the gal that runs the whole shebang kind of heard the song and said, wait, you know, maybe it didn't work in this category, but this song needs to be heard.
Peggy Monahan loved it. And as overall director of the Song of the Year contest, she got to choose one group. And so even though we didn't win our category, we were selected to play, and we played in the Sidney Lawrence Auditorium. And the acoustics in there are wonderful. And it was just Robin and I, her guitar, her voice, which is wonderful, and that guitar and the harmonica, the ghost. And it just, people tell me that they hear this song and it gives them goosebumps.
Yeah.
It's so haunting.
I followed you to this beautiful, unforgiving land. It seems like a century ago. Driven by the Cleveland hard times of 94 and the dreams of finding gold in rugged mountains. I stepped off the boat in 97 to meet you. Greeted by a rough camp of log cabins and the streets of mud, rustling through the trees like the wind, wandering through the forest of the mist, floating up 6 Mile Creek with the tide. I can't rest until my true love's by me. He wandered the forest hills for days, looking for color in all the creeks and streams, and all the best ground long since been staked. Disappointment and frustration filled your pen. So you set off across, turn again on, with two prospectors and a leaky borrowed book. A violent storm from gusting winds arose, and the boretide took the three of you to the deep. For your return, the child within me grew, and the fates took me with her, and they buried us together in this cold, rocky grave. And here at Point Comfort, patiently I wait in this beautiful, desolate place. The others have all left me. The camp is deserted. Broken dreams and faded headboards are all that remain. Rustling through the trees like the wind, wandering through the forest in the mist, floating up 6 Mile Creek with the tide. Can't rest until my true love's by my side. Rustling through the trees like the wind, wandering through the forest with the mist, floating up 6 Mile Creek with the tide. I can't rest until my true love's by my side. I can't rest until my true love's.
All right, that was Robin Green with the Ghost of Point Comfort, a song that Rolf Buzzlet made the lyrics for and plays a harmonica on. And that was recorded by our group from back then a few years ago called Resolution Road. And I played the clarinet part there and some of the backup vocals. And if you like the song, I believe Robin has a presence on MySpace. So go check there. It's Robin, R-O-B-I-N, Green, G-R-E-E-N-E. So give that a try on MySpace. And if that doesn't work, please do feel free to drop me an email through my website, davemanning.net. And this show is dedicated to Robin's husband, Jake. In one of... I guess great irony. Robin just recently lost her husband at a young age to cancer, and so I guess in some ways she's had to live through the kind of tragedy that she sang about so eloquently in her song. So I wish her all the best, and of course her family, as she begins to put the pieces of her life back together. And so, of course, as I mentioned, we dedicate the show to her husband, Jake.
Rocky grave. And here at Point Comfort, patiently I wait in this beautiful, desolate place. The others have all left.
You've been listening to the My Home is on the Road show. My name is Dave Manning. If you want to know anything about the show or about my music, go to davemanning.net. And I also want to give a big thank you to KWMD Guy for putting in so much work, keeping this radio station on the air. Matter of fact, he was telling me just the other day he's putting in so many hours working on the radio station that he kind of only has a vague recollection of what his wife looks like.
I was having a dream one night and woke up in the middle of the night, and the dream essentially was of a woman, and she was a ghost, and she was in a long white gown.
All right, hope you guys all have a fantastic day, and we will see you down the road.
Close your back, please.